Did you know that Nika AATC offers self-paced online courses on a growing range of topics aimed at helping you improve health outcomes for people with HIV? These interactive courses can typically be completed in about an hour and cover multidisciplinary topics such as smoking cessation in people with HIV, geriatric assessment and integration and models of care, managing difficult behaviors in HIV care settings, and using Zoom as a virtual workspace. Self-paced online courses are offered on Rise, Nika AATC's online learning platform. Courses are designed for healthcare providers providing patient care for people with HIV, including physicians, physician assistants, nurses, pharmacists, case managers, outreach workers, and other disciplines. To explore online courses for HIV care professionals, navigate to www.nikaatc.org/rise-courses. That's www.nikaatc.org/RISE-courses, or click the link in the podcast episode description. Welcome to Nika in the Know, a podcast for healthcare providers in the HIV field. I'm Mariana Braitman. Today, I'm sitting down with Dr. Joseph McGowan to talk about the use of DoxyPep or doxycycline for post-exposure prophylaxis as prevention for sexually transmitted infections. Dr. McGowan is the medical director for the HIV Service Line program at Northwell Health in New York. Welcome, Dr. McGowan.
Thank you, Mariana. Happy to be here.
So just to get the ball rolling, what is DoxyPep?
So DoxyPep, it's like a morning after pill to prevent bacterial sexually transmitted infections such as syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. And HIV PrEP works extremely well to protect against acquiring HIV, but it doesn't work at preventing sexually transmitted infections or STIs. So this is an added strategy for people to protect themselves if they have sex without using a condom.
What can you tell us about the current epidemiology of STIs in the U.S.?
So COVID really caused a major disruption in how we track and screen STIs in the U.S. Services were shut down and resources were shifted away from STI programs to deal with the pandemic. So our latest figures, which are from 2022, have to be viewed carefully, like through that lens. So many STIs, they don't cause symptoms. So unless a person comes to actually get screened for get a screening test for STIs, they may not even know they have it, and they could be passing it on to their sex partners. And our capacity to conduct screening at that time, even up to 2022, was still impaired by the COVID pandemic. There was a drop in gonorrhea in 2022, but it's still up 11% from the pre-pandemic level. So things have just sort of picked up from where we left off, and we have to see where that goes from here. Looking at chlamydia, after the expected COVID-related drop in 2020, the rates have increased each year, especially among young women having the highest rates. And most alarmingly, I think of what we're seeing is the rates of syphilis. They're up by 17% the past year, 80% from the pre-pandemic levels. And shockingly, the rate of newborn congenital syphilis has nearly doubled and is up 30% from the previous year, 2021. And while most of syphilis is occurring in men having sex with men, there's been a large increase among women leading to this rise in congenital syphilis. And STIs continue to disproportionately impact people of color, people identified as Black, African American, Hispanic American, American Indian, and Alaska Natives. And the likely causes of these STI increase in numbers is the stealthy nature of asymptomatic carriage, this lack of routine and frequent screening, online dating apps, which really increase sexual networks considerably, substance use, frequent condom use, both people who use PrEP and in non-PrEP users, condom use is going down, especially in men having sex with men. So these, I think, are a number of different reasons for this increase.
And so where do doxycycline and DoxyPep come into play with all of that?
So there's a scale of protection against STIs, and the least risk is not having sex at all, and followed by consistent condom use. And now DoxyPep is a new harm reduction option. It's better than not taking any means of protection. So it has this important role in harm reduction.
Can you talk a little bit about the clinical data available on the kinds of biomedical interventions that have been used to prevent STIs, including doxycycline?
Yes, definitely. I mean, DoxyPep, when we talk about DoxyPep, it means taking 200 milligrams of doxycycline, ideally within 24 hours as soon as possible, but no later than 72 hours after a sexual exposure without a condom to prevent bacterial STIs. And doxycycline is a commonly used antibiotic. It's in the fam class of tetracyclines that many people use long-term for treatment of acne, chest infections, dental, skin, tick-borne, and urinary tract infections. So we have a lot of experience with it. It's like one of the top five medications, antibiotics that are used. It's also a very effective treatment for chlamydia and syphilis, but much less so for gonorrhea. And depending on where you live, gonorrhea may have a higher chance of being already resistant to doxycycline. Another strategy that's been looked at is the meningitis B, the MenB vaccine, which works against group B meningitis. It's caused by a bacteria very closely related to gonorrhea. Initially, that showed some promise in preventing gonorrhea, but with further analysis, it is not shown to be effective. So currently, we don't recommend that strategy. So studies of DoxyPep have been done among people who've had at least one bacterial STI in the past year, in people with HIV, and people without HIV who are both on and off PrEP. And there are three major studies, major trials that have led to the guidelines around using DoxyPep. And those studies were done in cisgendered men and transgender women who have sex with men. And there were significant reductions in chlamydia and syphilis, but mixed results regarding the effectiveness of doxycycline preventing gonorrhea, at least in part due to this geographic variability we see in the risk of tetracycline resistance in gonococci. Overall, in the clinical trials, these populations of doxycycline dosed after sex reduced chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis by over two-thirds, 65 to 70%. However, there was a study done in cisgender women in Kenya of people who are taking HIV PrEP, and they found in that study that DoxyPep was not effective in preventing bacterial STIs in these cisgender women. This study is under great scrutiny now, and further research is planned among cis women, as we know from other studies that the vaginal tissue levels of doxycycline should be adequate to protect against these STIs. So this outcome right now is being attributed to a lack of uptake of treatment in the population. There is no data right now on DoxyPep use among cisgender men with sex partners assigned female at birth. However, DoxyPep used by cisgender men with female partners who have similar STI risk factors as the DoxyPep study population, such as having STIs, multiple sex partners, and being from a high prevalence population, could also potentially benefit from taking doxycycline. And we think maybe the individual and community benefits could outweigh the risk of using doxycycline in those circumstances. The degree of protection against a protective effect with insertive vaginal sex, though, is still unknown. But this strategy of extending the use of DoxyPep to cisgendered men who have sex with women could indirectly affect rates of STIs in cisgender women and by therefore extend to neonates, because those are the populations who experience the majority of complications from STIs, including infertility. So the bottom line is we should think about DoxyPep on a case-by-case basis for cisgender men who have sex with women to have that extended benefit.
And what exactly are the recommendations and guidelines when it comes to the use of DoxyPep for healthcare providers?
So the guidelines are in various states of revision. There are various guidelines in state and city localities that have come up with some guidance. The CDC and others recommend DoxyPep for cisgender men who have sex with men and transgender women with a history of STIs with HIV or without HIV, regardless of whether you're using HIV PrEP. And that's the group with the highest supportive evidence. But they leave the door open for other populations. And some guidelines also include these same high-risk groups, even if they haven't yet been diagnosed with an STI within the past year. And that sort of makes sense. And New York State goes a bit further, recommending that clinicians should engage in a shared decision-making with cisgender men who engage in condomless sex with multiple partners assigned female sex at birth, and if they've had a bacterial STI diagnosed within the past year, and offering DoxyPep to them on a case-by-case basis.
Are there any practical considerations for healthcare providers when thinking about implementing DoxyPep?
Yeah, an STI risk assessment has to be conducted. That's an individualized process. And the risk benefit profile for DoxyPep will vary based on individual patient factors, rates of STIs in their sexual networks, engagement in high-risk practices such as sex with multiple partners, group sex, sex for money or drugs, combining sex and substance use. And this individualized assessment is an important aspect of the shared decision-making between the patient and clinician. And be sure to discuss the dosing. It's usually 200 milligram capsules or tablets. There is a 200 milligram extended release form, but it's sort of hard to get. It's more expensive. So you use the least expensive one. So you take 200 milligrams as soon as possible after sex, but no later than 72 hours. Avoid taking it with milk or dairy products, antacids or vitamins that contain magnesium, aluminum, or calcium or iron within 2 hours before or after a dose, because those things could chelate the medication. Instruct the patient to sit upright for about 30 minutes and try to avoid direct sunlight the day of use, wear a hat or sunblock. Take no more than 200 milligrams any day, even if you have multiple sexual partners that day. It's 200 milligrams per day. And I usually give a 30-day supply to use, and then the patient can call back when more is needed. In the study, the median dose was about 3 or 4 doses per month. And clinicians should screen, of course, for HIV, syphilis, and chlamydia and gonorrhea at all exposure sites at least every 3 months, and offer HIV PrEP to those who test HIV negative, and antiretroviral therapy for individuals with HIV if they're not already on treatment. And I emphasize that DoxyPep is not adequate to treat an STI, so screening to know if you remain negative is very important.
What about any adverse reactions or potential for resistance?
Yeah, these are very important issues. So the adverse effects of doxycycline are generally mild, with gastrointestinal symptoms being most common. Other adverse effects include photosensitivity, so you can get a rash, but it's not an allergic reaction. It's just being exposed to sun when you take the medicine, and esophageal discomfort when swallowed. So the patient should be advised to take a full glass of water, sit upright for 30 minutes after swallowing. The doxycycline is not recommended for use in pregnancy because of potential adverse effects on the fetus if exposed, such as staining of the teeth and bones. And this is based on limited data, mostly extrapolated from tetracycline. An antimicrobial resistance, as you mentioned, is a concern at both the individual and a population level, both for bacterial STIs and for non-STI pathogens, as if there's widespread or long-term use. And it may take years for us to really determine the impact and the effect of this. And additional research is needed and is ongoing. And to date, studies of DoxyPep have not found detectable resistance in syphilis or chlamydia. But as we mentioned, doxycycline resistance is already a concern for other STIs, including Neisseria gonorrhea, but also Mycoplasma genitalium. And when you look at tetracycline resistance as a surrogate for doxycycline among gonorrhea, it varies geographically, and it's about 20.6% nationwide, according to the CDC. In places like France, where some of the other DoxyPep studies were done, it's over 50%. So that's where the efficacy was less. And doxycycline is an important antibiotic to treat non-STIs when other oral other treatment options are limited, including MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, among other things. antibiotic resistance genes, they tend to cluster. And so if you're selecting tetracycline resistance, you might also be linked to other resistance patterns, which might include cephalosporins. And that's the only class right now of drug that's consistently effective for gonorrhea. So that's something that's going to have to be watched. And it's unclear what impact DoxyPep would have on any individual's microbiome. There are some early studies that are looking at that now. But overall, the frequency of doses used and the use limited to high-risk populations could really reduce that pressure for antibiotic resistance to emerge to any great extent through the use of DoxyPep. But this, again, remains an area of great research interest.
As we begin to wrap up, what else do healthcare providers need to know about offering DoxyPep to persons at increased risk for bacterial STIs?
Yeah, I mean, so there's already a lot of use of DoxyPep in the community that's not being monitored at all. So engaging them as well as sexual partners of current DoxyPep and PrEP users is important. And clinicians should emphasize that DoxyPep is not 100% effective in preventing bacterial STIs, and it has a varying degree of efficacy in preventing chlamydia, syphilis, and especially gonorrhea. Currently, DoxyPep is not recommended to protect against STI acquisition through receptive vaginal sex. So again, that's an area where more research is needed. And it's essential to provide counseling and education to patients on the importance of consistently using the intervention and the limitations of DoxyPep, and to emphasize that ongoing condom use and engagement in sexual health services is really necessary, including but not limited to routine STI screening, STI testing for symptomatic patients, and STI treatment or evaluation after an STI exposure. And some of this follow-up can be done through telehealth or remote screening options too, okay? So individuals using DoxyPep who are diagnosed with gonorrhea, chlamydia, or syphilis, they should be treated according to their CDC STI treatment guidelines. And DoxyPep has had a lot of interest in the community, so we could use this as sort of as a hook, as an entree for patients to receive PrEP and start engagement in primary care. A lot of people, especially LGBT persons, are not engaged routinely in primary care, so this could be a real opportunity. And DoxyPep is an exciting new harm reduction strategy. It can help us get ahead of these sobering STI rates that we've been seeing, and we can reach the people really in greatest need.
Dr. McGowan, thanks so much for joining us and telling us all about DoxyPep for STI prevention. We really hope you learned something new today. To learn more about NICA AATC's work and our role in ending the HIV epidemic, visit us at www.nicaaatc.org. That's www.necaaatc.org. If you have questions or comments about anything we covered today, or if you have suggestions for topics you'd like to hear us talk about, don't hesitate to email us at podcast@nicaaatc.org. That's podcast@nicaaatc.org. Stay safe, and we'll see you on Thursday for our next episode of NICA in the Know. This presentation is supported by the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. The contents are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement by, HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government.